Hey everyone, sorry this one's a little late, but this week we're doing Bridget Jones's Diary in honor of the new movie coming out, which of course is Bridget Jones's baby. However, the reason it came out is ironic enough. While we try to record ahead and we have plenty of episodes, so don't worry, myopia isn't going anywhere. The reason, of course, that we were late is appropriate because my wife indeed did have our baby. And so if you hear any weird sound in the background, it's because, in fact, my baby is... There she is. Hello, little Naomi. So, without further ado, let's return to Bridget Jones's Diary.
There is one question that brings fear into the heart of everyone.
Who is single?
How's your love life?
Haven't had a sniff of a shag in over 18 months.
Have you met Miss Jones?
For Bridget Jones, it was always the same old story.
She's fine. Drive on.
Your mother's trying to fix you up with some divorcee.
Mark? Do you remember Bridget? She used to run around your lawn with no clothes on, remember?
But everything...
Is that Cleaver chap still as cute as ever?
Oh, God, yes.
...is about to change.
Your happiness now depends on how you behave on this one social occasion.
How about a drink at my place? No funny business, just full sex.
You got a boyfriend?
I have a father, and he's perfect.
Now, these are very silly little boots. This is a very silly little dress.
Blimey.
Absolutely enormous pants.
I hope he's good enough for our little Bridget.
I'm king of the world!
I think I can say absolutely not. Now, Bridget needs to decide between a man who seems too good to be true.
You're the only one who can save me, Bridget. I need you.
And a man so wrong, he could be right.
I mean, you seem to go out of your way to try to make me feel like a complete idiot every time I see you.
No, I like you very much, just as you are.
All right, Cleaver, outside.
I'm sorry? Should I bring my dueling pistols or my sword?
The real fire!
Why do you want to work in television?
I've got to leave my current job because I've shagged my boss.
Fair enough. Start on Monday. We'll see how we go.
Bridget Jones, wanton sex goddess with a very bad man between her thighs. Dad.
The Terminus Doctor Who Podcast. Queer. Opinionated. Whovian. Female. The Terminus Podcast is available on iTunes, Stitcher and many other favorite podcatchers. You can find us online at terminus.libsyn.com or on Twitter at terminuscast or on Facebook at www.facebook.com/groups/terminusdwpodcast. Or finally on Tumblr at terminusdwpodcast.tumblr.com. Be sure to check us out there and subscribe to keep up with new episodes. Allons-y.
Welcome to Myopia Defend Your Childhood. This week we watched 2001's Bridget Jones's Diary, a movie that I have claimed to be the biopic of my life. I'm your host, guest host, Madison Sage. On panel tonight we have...
John.
Jeremy.
Christina.
Nick Hoffman, editor-in-chief of Dude Letter and Dude Letter Podcasting.
So, guys, This was a movie that I think was definitely going to be kind of a mixed bag as far as reviews. I know that Nick was saying that when he went into this, we thought this was going to be one of those movies where all the girls would say, yay, this is great, and all the guys would say, oh, that was terrible. But it sounds like it didn't necessarily go that way. So, Christina, would you like to do us the honors and give us a plot summary?
I would be happy to. So, we start with Lonely Bridget in the opening. 30-something-year-old single lady, no prospects. Kind of shitty job.
The direct eye contact you're making with Madison is kind of awkward at this point.
I'm just going to look away. I have a great job.
And you're not in your 30s yet.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's very Pride and Prejudice. Actually, it follows Pride and Prejudice pretty much to a T. She encounters Mr. Darcy at a holiday party thrown by her mother. Hates him because he badmouths her. Talks a lot of shit to his mom about her, and then she goes and drinks a lot. She falls in love with her boss, has an affair with him. He and Darcy have a pass. They have a lot of conflicting, staring, brooding scenes with each other.
There's a lot of staring.
Yeah. And then
this is an English movie.
Right.
There's a lot of looking off into the near distance.
I feel like if we'd had subtitles on, it would have said staring intensifies.
Exactly. It finally, the truth about their past comes out. Big fight ensues, and then Bridget ends up with Mr. Darcy at the end of it.
Spoilers!
Oh, no, you're fine.
And Mr. Darcy on many levels, isn't he? The character is Darcy. He's played by
Colin Firth.
Who's made a career of playing Mr. Darcy.
Yeah. And he's super dreamy, just like Mr. Darcy.
Agreed.
Is this the most English movie ever?
No.
Oh, I'm sure there's one that's
They say
more
fuck
English.
A lot. That's
they
pretty
did.
English. That's
they did nice. Say fuck a lot, which I really appreciate. Her friend Shazzy or whatever, Shaza. I don't.
Fuck him.
I don't know. She was like, "Fuck their fucking asses." I was like, "I like her. She's mean."
Likes to say fuck a lot.
No. It was the blonde one. The blonde one was always saying the F word. Moaning Myrtle was always crying, even though she was obviously a super successful businesswoman. And then they had the gay 90s pop star friend with the ego the size of the London Tower. It was intense.
Well, and there was some more charming British profanity as well, of course. At one point she tries to run outside in her underwear, and I thought she'd put on clothing, but she just puts on shoes, but she runs out and says bollocks and then runs back in, which is charming.
I do love bollocks.
Of course, yes.
But yeah, so anyway, so let's talk about some of these characters. So, you know, we have Bridget, who, as Christina said, 30-something, lonely, sad woman who's just trying desperately to find any person in the world that'll be hers. Because as a single woman, it seems like everybody that you're around is always with their person. And you go home, and it's just you, and you're going to be eaten by wild dogs, and you have Chaka Khan and vodka, and oh my god, it's my life. Let's talk about her boss, Daniel Cleaver, played by the always cute Hugh Grant.
So this is after he'd been caught with a prostitute, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
That was mid-90s.
Yeah. That was after...
he dated Elizabeth Hurley.
He was dating
Elizabeth Hurley at the time, and that was back in the 90s when she was like crazy hot as opposed to just like
super hot.
Yeah. Really hot.
Does that speak more towards Hugh Grant or Elizabeth Hurley that he went to a
She drink? Looks like she would be a terrible lover. I'm just saying. She looks like she just lays in bed.
I don't find Hugh Grant that attractive. I find Colin Firth much more attractive.
Oh, Colin Firth is way, way, way more attractive.
I mean, first of all, his hair is 90s big. His hair is 90s huge.
Bitch, don't act like my hair isn't fabulous. Like, it is luxurious hair. I want to run my fingers through that hair.
And it's that English mullet thing he has going, which is kind of fluffy on the top. It's a mixture of, like, 90s surfer guy with the kind of part in the middle, but it mullets down in the back, and three sizes too big.
It's like the Home Improvement kid.
Oh, he's
Jonathan
wearing...
Taylor Thomas.
Yes. He's wearing a helmet of hair. Essentially, he's just saving his cranium, that's all.
It would have been great if during the fight scene, Colin Firth throws a hook that gets stuck in it, and he's like, ha ha, I beat you. Like, he's the Blob or something.
It's like Magneto's helmet. Oh, God.
Do you think the views of Daniel Cleaver's character and Colin Firth's character was kind of skewed by Bridget's perspective, and we were kind of seeing it.
Oh, well, absolutely. Yeah.
I was telling John Copsey this earlier.
That's me.
He's on our panel.
I was telling the John this, and perennial host Perini. If this movie was made maybe 10 years later, it would have had much more of the Scott Pilgrim effect, because I think you're right. I think a lot of it's in her head. Like, there's a weird kind of dream fantasy sequence of her marrying Hugh Grant. Right. And it's a lot of over-the-top stuff that I think would have definitely fit in with much more kind of cartoon cut, and then it becomes very bright and technicolor-y. Yeah.
You could almost see it with Darcy's character, because, I mean, I remember at the very end, one of the things that the climax of it with her running out in her underwear is that he read her diary. Mr. Darcy.
Would he have gotten her a new iPad?
I know, right? Well, and then there was a... I read what was written in there last night, and it was like, he acts like he has a gherkin stuck up in his ass.
It was a giant gherkin.
You know, but I'm sure that was written time before he confessed his love.
Of course.
You know, and he acted like that in the movie.
Of course. I mean, she says something about how no wonder his clever wife left him. I hate him. And obviously, once she found out about the clever wife situation, she rally crossed all the way to to the Darcy's Christmas party thing, right, or New Year's Eve party, where then she finds out that
he's also engaged.
Yeah, soon to be Mr. Darcy and his Natasha are going to America.
I did a terrible job summarizing everything.
Well, we missed.
You did a fine.
No, you were fine. You were fine.
That's honestly the bit that yeah, either confused me or I didn't like, because we're introduced to
Mark.
No, the other guy.
Oh, Daniel.
Daniel, we're introduced to him as a philanderer, as just a really bad guy that she gets involved with. But then she falls for Colin Firth, who already has an attachment with someone else, and it's at the climax when she finds out he's engaged or soon to be engaged and runs out on him. Mm-hmm. And suddenly he's the good prospect, whereas the philanderer she caught in bed with halfway through the film is the bad prospect.
Well, okay, so in the very beginning...
Neither one of them said they had affairs outside of her.
Okay, so let's look at it this way. So at the beginning of the movie, she has that really sad, depressing New Year's Eve party with her parents, because who doesn't want to spend New Year's Eve with their parents? And she gets back to London, and she's thinking about what she's going to do with her life. She starts this new diary because she's going to lose weight and stop drinking and stop smoking and be a better person and find her person. Okay, great. And she writes in there, you know, no alcoholics, workaholics,
fuckwits,
just all around fuckboys, just as we would say in nowadays language. And she's like, and especially somebody who embodies all of these things, Daniel Cleaver.
Yeah.
Although I have to say, they never mentioned his alcohol problem. He did, however, have an affinity for anal sex, because they do talk about that an awful lot in this movie. No, when they're on holiday, she rolls over in bed and she goes, you know, Daniel, what we just did is illegal in most countries.
Oh, right, and his poem was about...
Butt stuff.
They were into some butt stuff. Yeah. And then her mother called her on Christmas and starts telling her about stuff that Julian guy, the TV sales guy, she's like, he did this thing the other night where I rolled over and I felt this big. She's like, whoa, no, I'm out. Bye, Mom. Gross. Ooh.
I just thought it was an erection.
I assumed it was all butt stuff. That's where my brain went.
A plug of one sort or another.
Given the relationship her mother had with her father, it could have been just straight on sex. Yeah.
You know, Mark Maron gets sponsored by AdamandEve.com. I think this is our foray into that at this point. Butt stuff.
Buttstuff.com. If we just had a panel member named Ashley and we were the hosts, we could have AshleyMadison.com sponsor us. I can only do so much, guys.
Hey, I mean, you know what?
But
works for me.
I was initially confused by how the mom's affairs related into this, like how it fit in with the plot. But thinking more on it, it seems like the mom was so keen on getting Bridget Jones set up,
mm-hmm,
presumably for life, with a guy. And then the mom goes ahead and says, our marriage is a sham. It's collapsing. I'm going off to have an affair with this TV celebrity. Mm-hmm. Kind of showing that there's no such thing as a happy ending. It's whatever you make of it.
Right. Except I have to say it was really sweet when she came back home on Christmas and she, you know, confesses to all that happened and what her time was with Julian, and she turns to Mr. Jones and she's like, so
who's Professor Slughorn?
Yes, he was Professor Slughorn.
Jim Broadbent, yeah.
And the woman who plays Mrs. Jones, her last name is actually Jones, which is really fun in real life.
Jones.
So she says to him, you know, what do you think? Should we give it another go? And he's like, I don't know. I mean, you left. And you can see she's just heartbroken and devastated. And he goes, you daft cow, I can't work without you. Like, it was, to me, that was such a lovely moment. Because, yeah, like, I'm sure, I mean, I'm not married, obviously, but marriage is hard. Marriage is hard work. And there are going to be lots of ups and downs. And you're going to hit a point where you're like, Jesus, I've spent 30 years with this person and I didn't get to do X, Y, and Z. And you have this urge to run away, and some people do and some people don't. But in the end, sometimes you come back to each other and you realize, you know what? The grass isn't greener on the other side. It was just a different shade from where I was looking at. Like, maybe it's not so bad over here. Maybe if we work on our garden, our grass will be a little greener too.
Right.
I'm laughing at what you're saying. I laugh at the line, as you can tell, I'm not married. As though from their from your voice, we can somehow tell that's the voice of a single lady.
Well, I have professed my love for Nicolas Cage multiple times on this podcast, so clearly I'm single. No one's going to touch that with a 10-foot stick.
That's so funny.
But I just want to touch on something you said earlier about how she's kind of romanticizing these guys. As somebody that's single in late 20s and is looking for somebody, it's really easy to romanticize these people. Like, you meet them and you think, oh my God, they're the best person ever. Like, we're going to be together forever. And you can see yourself getting married and having kids and all this stuff. And then you're like, oh, wait, it's been 2 weeks and I'm a psycho.
Yeah.
Well, that was the Daniel affair, right?
Like, yeah, but
she knew he was bad, but they were having sex routinely and they were going places as a, I guess, a couple.
Yeah, they went on mini holiday.
And, you know, she professed her love to him and then he immediately skedaddles. And it's abandons her at a party.
I think that what is make this it makes it relatable because I think everyone's been in that situation or close to it, either on the receiving side or the non.
After butt stuff, you profess your love, and then they don't say anything, then they leave you at a Tarts and Vickers party.
Hey, that once you do butt stuff, you're in it for life. Come on.
Is that how that works?
Yep.
Yeah, you're unplugged in.
Speaking of butts,
I'm not. We're just gonna let that hang there. Don't laugh at that. That was bad.
I was actually thinking about this because there's like a 1995 version of Sense and Sensibility.
Oh, Emma.
I'm thinking of Sense and Sensibility.
Oh, with that's Gemma, Emma.
Well, it has Gemma Jones in it as the mom. Mrs. Farns something?
Farnsworth? Farnsby?
Dashwood.
Dashwood. Yeah.
And Hugh Grant is the love interest.
Oh, yes, that's right.
And so it's another Jane Austen. Like, this is Jane Austen within Jane Austen. I mean, now, to be fair, if you're English and you're an actor...
You're going to end up in an Austen.
It's either Shakespeare or Jane Austen.
Austen.
Really nothing in between.
Oh, probably both, right? Yeah. Because there's, like, 20 actors at any given time. And so it's...
Well, and now Harry Potter.
No, yeah, no, like, let's be honest. You're either going to be in a Jane Austen remake, a Shakespeare remake, in one of the Harry Potters and its other branches, or you're going to cameo in Doctor Who or Sherlock.
Or Game of Thrones.
No, stay out of this. Yeah. I'm the 1% that doesn't watch that show. I will not give in.
I don't either, but I will say, I think I love that like Doctor Who has become a testing ground because all the young actors go there, and then, I mean, young in acting, not necessarily in age, because, and then if they're good enough, they just take over the show, apparently.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think that Hugh Grant showed up at the King's speech and just made fun of Colin?
I hope so. Like he was heckling him off camera?
Yeah, I mean, I like the idea that they're actually rivals in real life because they're about the same age. They're,
right.
They're male leads and they're...
They were born a day apart.
But they're
two totally different. Like, Hugh Grant is definitely the bad boy, like, biker guy with the leather jacket. Mm-hmm. And Colin Firth is, like, the handsome professor with, like...
Grant, biker boy?
It's just in my mind. Go with
just
it.
Just easy fuck boy.
And Dan and Daniel and... Colin Firth is like the professor with like the houndstooth coat with like the leather like elbow patches. Like he's the safe, secure one, and Hugh Grant's the I might get something from this guy, but maybe it's worth it.
I believed he was into butt stuff.
So
speaking of butts, let's go back to Saddam Hussein's butt. And when Bridget...
Oh, that was the best way to leave. That was the best way to quit a job. Segway. I would rather have a job wiping Saddam Hussein's ass than working for you was probably the greatest line I ever... Like, I've always wanted to say that to somebody, but he's dead now, so it'd be even weirder.
It was like the start of Bridget's montage of her transformation.
Oh, yeah. And I love when she throws out all the books about how to get men and what men want. And she's like, how to live without men, and women that want men are stupid, and I'm going to start working out all the time. And I'm like, oh my God, this is every woman's seesaw effect. It's,
right.
I'm going to do everything I can to be desirable. Oh, I got screwed over. F guys, I'm just going to work on me, and I'm going to be an independent woman, and watch me go.
And it's cut between with shots of her on an exercise until she literally falls over.
Has no one else done that? Because I totally have done that. I've gotten off exercise bikes and my legs just didn't work anymore.
No, I mean, that's a perfect, it's a metaphor for everything. I'm changing my life, I'm getting in shape, and she just literally can't do it anymore. And she falls over.
What got me when I was younger and I watched this movie was I noticed that when she's throwing out all of the books about how to get men and stuff, she throws away empty bottles of vodka and wine and cigarettes. She pours the cigarettes out individually. So it's like, okay, she's given up smoking. But this time around, when I saw her throw out the empty bottles of vodka and wine, I thought, she just drank all of that. Yeah. She did not dump that down the drain.
Also, I'm not aware how the metric system works because I'm American. I don't bother.
But they didn't use it in this movie at all.
Oh, then
except for units.
But what is 50 units of alcohol? Because I thought that meant she drank 50 drinks, which would kill anyone. I don't know what 50 units is.
Yeah, and it doesn't say, like, 50 units per week.
I thought it was, like,
today,
5 liters.
50 units.
You know, 50 unit, like, is whatever, but
you think a unit is a drink. Like, a unit of beer is a bottle of beer.
And it's a daily journal. And it measures her weight over time, which goes up and down, which is funny. But then it also says how many cigarettes she had, which she does ultimately give up. And then it says how many alcohol units. And the first entry is 50. And I've been to a lot of drunken New Year's parties. I've never had 50 drinks.
Yeah, we've all been together for New Year's.
I thought it was milliliters.
That's half a liter.
That's easy.
That's half a liter.
That's not alcoholic.
Here's what bugs me is, okay, it's a British, quote, British, unquote, movie. Why is she measuring herself in pounds?
Why is an American playing an English woman?
Better than
Why was an American anteater playing a human?
Okay, I will
better question.
Renee Zellweger. Now she looks like some sort of ant monster. If you haven't seen her lately, she
why are all these ants at our picnic?
And she got rid of eyebrows.
I also think putting on huge amounts of weight and then taking it off for Chicago and back on. And Hobbs does not do good for
you. She looks much better as Bridget Jones than she did in Chicago.
Oh my gosh,
I'll just say that.
Yeah.
And it's not because I'm a curvy woman. I just have to say, I just think she
looks
healthier.
How does she lose all her boob in Chicago? Like,
I don't even... Weight.
I think it was the
like,
outfit.
It's crazy.
Yeah. That being said...
You can also ace bandage those things down.
Oh, that's true.
Well, and it's funny here to see...
she looks like my crazy stepmom.
This is what she looks like today. She looks like some sort of... Again, this is a plastic surgery problem because she lost any detail to her face.
Yeah,
if someone
took
a power sander.
How is she going to be in the next Bridget Jones movie?
She is.
Prosthesis.
CGI face.
Prosthesis?
Well, because if you see the pictures
of
her
in a fat suit?
She looks like Bridget Jones in Bridget Jones's Baby.
Well, she looks like a person in Bridget Jones's...
She has emotion.
Well, and I like her in this movie because she's not... I mean, it was 2001. They could have gotten, like, I was going to come up with people from the 90s. That's not fair. This caused 9/11, people. No,
it wasn't an inside job. It was Renee Zellweger.
You think they would have gotten, like, Rebel Wilson to be Bridget Jones if it was going to be this?
No, and that's what bugs me so much is that they kept saying how, I thought you said she was thin and she's the chubby girl. I'm like, she's 130 pounds and she's probably, like, 5'8".
Yeah.
Seriously?
She looked well rounded.
Yeah.
She looked like
she was
a
normal.
Person.
Like normal.
She looked like an average size human.
98-pound, 6-foot tall twig.
Like, I don't know.
It's like, having recently watched Pitch Perfect, which I am not ashamed to say.
It's fine.
It's like.
Well, the first one's good, the second sucks.
Yeah. I think we can agree on that.
Didn't Anna Kendrick have like a lesbian scene in the second one? I thought you liked that.
Did she?
I think I would have remembered that.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
In the
I'm
first one,
maybe that was just my fantasy.
Was hitting on the German singer.
Anyway, she, you've got super thin Twiggy girls, and you've got Rebel Wilson.
Yeah.
And nothing in between.
Yeah, what about medium-sized girls? Why I love the Mindy
the
Project.
The Bridget Joneses are not shown.
Like, Mindy Kaling is... She is... No, there's an article I read recently about... medium-sized women, because there's skinny, and then there's plus size. Mm-hmm. And what the hell's in between?
How about healthy? Right.
Yeah, so there's the medium-sized woman. And Renee Zellweger was on the lighter side of medium-sized woman in this movie. And it was very offensive to me that they kept referring to her as chubby. And it's like in another British movie, Love Actually, where the woman
same screenwriter.
Yeah, where they talk about that beautiful woman who's Hugh Grant's secretary, and they kept talking about how she had these humongous thighs like tree trunks. I'm like, she's a sexy woman. What is your problem, you twiggy little bitch?
It's interesting in both those movies.
Not body shaming.
The
sorry.
Guys don't notice it. It's only the other women who point it out. Like, it's like almost like women are putting each other down.
They absolutely are.
Welcome to 2016. Women only get dressed up for other women. Women only lose weight for other women. Guys like us regardless. They're like, ooh, boobs.
Right.
Like, it doesn't matter what you look like. Mm-hmm. Boobs.
You're very judgy for considering that you're the one saying that that's a good thing. Boobs. That being said, I'm trying to think of who it would be. It would probably be a... Tara Reid exists in 2000.
Tara Reid?
She did exist. She was alive.
I was thinking Julia Stiles. Stiles would have been good.
I don't know if she would put the weight on for it.
No.
But, no,
well,
I'm just saying...
She would have been, like, 19 at the time, wouldn't she?
Oh, that's true. Yeah. She's too young.
Yeah. Yeah, she's really young.
If they did a modern-day version...
She's actually English, right?
If we did a modern-day version, I think it would be with Mindy Kaling.
But she's... I like Mindy Kaling as a writer, but she always plays things too dumb. That's why I stopped watching the Mindy Project. Yeah. She's a doctor who doesn't know anything about babies. It's weird.
I don't know. I think she's adorable.
No, she's funny. And she's actually very funny.
It's infuriating as somebody who works in healthcare, but it's still cute.
I was trying to think of who it would be today. I was thinking 2000, like if you wanted someone who was too hot, they would have cast Giselle Bundchen if it were an American movie. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But it's not. Luckily, it was an English movie. But
who would be today? That's a good question.
Because, again, I think it would be fun to have some... Actually, you know who it would be? Hermione.
Emma Watson?
You think she would do that?
Well, because she's 28 now, isn't she?
Yeah. I think Emma Watson would do that.
Yeah, she's very much women power.
Are we only going with British actresses?
No, I'm just thinking. Like, she's someone who plays... She's an attractive person, but she's not, like, a sex symbol.
And she's a feminist.
And she plays funny very well. And this is about a strong, independent woman. It's not
but
crazy.
But is Bridget really strong?
No.
I don't think she's very confident in herself at all.
I think she's trying to find herself.
Right.
She's trying to be.
I think... I have to say, it's a quote that I heard one time, and I kind of live by it, is that in a world of Elle Woods, I'll always be Bridget Jones.
I like that.
And I'm totally okay with that, because I'm on my own, like, path, too. But I still don't think I would look at Bridget and think, man, she's what I want to be doing. Because in the end, it's still all about just finding a guy for her. Like, even with the self-improvement, that doesn't even matter. It goes by the wayside. It's just, oh my god, I finally got a guy.
This movie fails the Bechdel test.
It does. Absolutely. It's just about her finding a man. It's not about her, like, and the losing weight is to find a man. Quit smoking to lose a man. Stop drinking to lose, like, to find a man. It's all to find a man.
The exact thing that made her turn off against Mr. Darcy was because he said, why do I want to get with someone who's a chain smoker, an alcoholic, doesn't have
any fashion sense
to say, and no fashion sense? Although, says the guy in the reindeer sweater.
Right. Although that being said, that pissed me off that it bothered her because she was intentionally trying to turn him off to her.
Right.
She was doing it on purpose. Yeah. She was chugging the wine or whatever it was. And
I think that was just her being nervous. Like, I gotta say, I do dumb stuff like that all the time. I'm around hot men.
If I recall correctly, though, it's because her mom's always trying to hook her up on these New Year's parties, right?
But,
and so he's like, oh, it's him? And then she takes a cigarette away from someone else and goes, oh, yeah.
Her dad.
Yeah.
Well,
her dad is so great. I love Jim Broadbent.
Even in Pride and Prejudice, Elizabeth Bennet gets pretty pissed off with it, even though she's not at all.
Yeah.
But Bridget Jones, by far, is not Elizabeth
Bennet.
See, I have
to say,
Bennet.
Elizabeth Bennet is a strong, independent woman
that is
definitely a good role model for women. Even, I'll say it, and you can quote me on this because I'm saying it on a recording.
Ooh, evidence.
Even that little twiggy bitch, Keira Knightley, is an independent, strong woman that I can look up to.
That's who would have been cast.
That would have been good, yeah.
Yeah, that's the casting.
Can you imagine her gaining even 10 pounds, though?
She would look normal.
Yeah, she just wouldn't be a skeleton. And she's just bones with a meat suit.
Was she just in... Was it Sense and Sensibility, the one filmed in J.J. Abrams' house?
No, I thought she was in Much Ado About Nothing.
Much Ado About Nothing.
No, she wasn't in that.
Wasn't Michael Fassbender in that?
I love the stories that she's so thin that during Pirates of the Caribbean they had to draw on her boobs.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they wouldn't actually show up on camera.
No.
They had to use bronzer to shade it.
Yeah, and then she had,
what's a better job, that or painting Mystique in the X-Men movies?
Ooh, painting Mystique. Oh, Jennifer Lawrence is up. Yeah. Jennifer Lawrence! That's who would do it now.
If you have someone, not necessarily English.
She does kind of look like Renee Zellweger.
No, take that back. She is a beautiful woman.
I think Renee Zellweger in this looks good.
She's very good.
Who is the Rose Byrne? Rose Byrne could be a good Bridget Jones.
Fair enough. Yeah. Now, who would the guy be, ladies?
Channing Tatum.
And? Channing Tatum as
Daniel Cleaver.
Yeah.
And?
As Hugh Grant.
As Hugh Grant. Channing Tatum as Hugh Grant.
Daniel Radcliffe.
No, he can't play bad boy in my mind. No.
He's not that cute, in my mind.
But yeah, Daniel, not cute.
But I also don't think he's supposed to be, see, the problem with, what's his name?
You just wanted to be Emma Watson the guy that played Ron and
they already have half the Harry Potter cast in this movie.
I would love them to just show up in other movies doing this, Ron and
Hermione
Harry
Granger's Diary.
Oh my gosh. Oh, that would be pretty awesome.
I would watch that.
But yeah. I mean, it's not even that it's Daniel Radcliffe because he's so hot. I think Channing Tatum is too hot to be in the role because they're supposed to be attainable average.
Okay.
And he's not charismatic. I feel like he can't pull off that charm that.
It's the same reason why I don't think someone
at her face. Her face is
dark. That is where we disagree.
I love Channing Tatum. I do.
You don't even get his name right. You just hate him.
I've been drinking vodka.
Much better than Liam Hemsworth in this new Independence Day.
Okay, we didn't watch that. What if that's it? What if it's Liam Hemsworth as Daniel Craig? Or as Daniel Craig.
Versus his brother.
Oh my God!
who in their right mind would pick Liam over Chris? Come on.
Someone who likes brunettes over blondes.
Yeah. Can I have both? Porcano Los Dos?
Oh my God, that's been so. Oh,
oh
so
and Chris Hemsworth's wife. Chris Hemsworth's wife is that really hot Brazilian cop in Fast Five.
Oh, that's right, she is.
She could join in too. That's fine.
What's the name of the actress who plays Black Widow?
Scarlett Johansson.
Scarlett Johansson.
She's a believable nut job.
And she
I love how we're avoiding talking about the actual movie.
I know.
Well, because the movie's the problem with this, at least for me, is it's a charming movie that we all enjoy.
I have to say, we never got. I know that before we started this, John and his delightful wife Kelly both ranted about how much they hated this. So I would like to hear from the person that did not like the movie what they did not like about it.
Well, oddly enough, as we watched it, I think we flipped in our opinions of the movie. I ended up thinking it's a charming movie. It's nothing amazing, but it's a charming movie. Kelly ended up just despising this movie.
Is it because it was about feminism?
Well, she doesn't know what it is, so that's okay. But it's more just the little things like, why is she wearing pajamas at home when everyone knows she would just not wear pants?
Sometimes I wear pajamas at home.
I wear pajamas. Does Kelly just not wear pants?
It's Kelly. She's just naked all the time.
She's just, I mean, that's why I married her. Really.
It's also, to be fair, winter in England, and they don't believe in heat, and they don't,
not central heat.
John, you can speak to this. I mean, as the resident Brit.
They don't have central heat often. Usually it's a radiator.
Yeah.
A couple of radiators. Or a fireplace in this case.
Yep. I do remember that from my time in England.
It gets cold, but, I mean, it was snowing in London for a lot of this movie, and I have no idea when the last time it really, honest to God, snowed that hard in England. Well, it doesn't happen anymore.
Well, my thought along the same line is,
what would Al Gore say about that?
Well, that's just inconvenient.
An inconvenient plot. I was actually going to say, I know it's supposed to start at New Year's, right? And then end on New Year's. Mm-hmm. The timeline of this really feels kind of weird. Because,
an X-Men movie?
Well, no, I just don't know how long the relationship with Hugh Grant lasts before it falls apart.
2 weeks, basically, I think.
No, I think
they were flirting for longer than that, weren't they?
But their actual, being, from the first time they got together when he says, those are enormous panties. to
I love that scene.
To the American woman in the bathroom that says, I thought you said she was thin. That's like 2 weeks.
Well, I thought that was summertime because it was warm, and when they got together, it was cold.
I think they got together in the spring. Yeah, like maybe like late February.
But it doesn't really warm up till like June.
Well, I mean, it's
we never see her in warm months, though. Let's be honest. It's always cold. She's always wearing a scarf.
No, they went on their mini break.
I'm just curious, and it doesn't really matter. But I'm just that was the one thing that felt kind of like a big plot. No, it wasn't even a plot issue. It was just this movie doesn't seem to have a timeline. But I get it because when you're in love.
Time just flies by. Yeah.
Right, and I'm wondering if I'm off base here, but before Mr. Darcy's whole speech of I love you just the way you are, there is literally no indication given that he is into her.
That's like Pride and Prejudice.
Yeah, Mr. Darcy does that.
Yeah. I mean, and you...
So he's just playing it true to form, really.
Yeah.
Yeah, and but you can't see them... My biggest thing is... What do they have in common? Nothing.
No, that's the same.
You can imagine them bickering.
That's what Jane Austen did, too. Jane Austen had them bicker all the time, and they never saw eye to eye. And they're always like, yeah, well, F you too, whatever, I don't need you. And then finally it's like...
You think she doth protest too much.
Yeah, then... Does mother know you weareth her... Does mother know you weareth her drapes? Sorry, Avengers.
I did like how she had a successful kind of moment with Colin Firth, and her first thought is, I need to change my underwear to look sexier. That was funny.
That is a real problem that women do. I was telling... Jeremy and I were watching this last night, and I said that there's a major... This is a major theme with women, is when you're getting ready to go to some kind of cocktail party or a wedding or any event where you could possibly meet somebody, you have the decision of, do I wear my Spanx, which later on will get me to the point where I take them off, or do I wear the ones that will look good when I have to take them off?
That was literally her, like, that was and so great that it was her discussion.
And it's a 100% true thought process that I'm sure 99% of women go through.
That guys don't even care if we wear giant underwear. They're just wanting to get through it. To the other side.
Whatever you're wearing, they're coming off anyway.
So we're about out of time. Let's go around the horn and talk about what we thought about the movie and give our final thoughts and opinions. Go, Nick, you can start.
So we do a lot of shitty action movies in here. So I thought it'd be fun to do more... romantic movies and more kind of rom-coms, because I think if any genre that deserves to be poked at, it's rom-coms. That's why I had someone else host. Last time we did a rom-com, Candace hosted, so I was thinking this would be a middle-of-the-road kind of movie, just like something like Cliffhanger was, something that the guys would like, the girls would hate. I was completely turned around, like John was. I really enjoyed this movie. I thought it was funny. I thought it was sometimes a little bit awkward, and I wish... At times it was a little bit more over the top because it seemed very muted when it could have been a lot sillier. But overall, I enjoyed it. I was worried that Renee Zellweger, I'd never seen this before, her English accent as an American would sound worse, but she maintains pretty well. I liked it very much.
Great. Yep. All right. So, Christina.
I fell in love with this movie in college, as every single crazy person does.
How dare you, madame.
I was crazy in college, like, and I felt like I related to Bridget a lot in college with that, wanting to have a boyfriend and finally having it and having your heart broken and then going through drunken messes of crap and then montage of losing 50 pounds and then all sorts of stuff like that. But now, as I see it even older, in my 30s, Bridget is a very strong person in my mind, but it's still a fun movie. I still enjoy it. It kind of makes me reminisce a little of all the fun times I had, and Bridget was there with me.
She was your passenger. All right. Jeremy, we watched this together. What did you think of it?
In the realm of romantic comedies, it's one of the better ones. Like, for the first 20 minutes or so, I thought it was going to be one of those, oh, woe is me, I can't find a man things. But thankfully, it didn't turn into that. I think the thing that appeals to me most about it is the vulgarity of it. Because it's not trying to be this sweet romantic comedy. It's messy, like real life mostly. So that I appreciated. That definitely elevated it above most of the horrible romantic comedies we see. So, yeah, nothing great, but very enjoyable. Yeah.
Good. And John?
I came into this movie expecting to hate it, because the first time I saw it, I didn't like it at all. And I think that was shortly after it came out. But looking at it now, and like everyone else, I'm significantly older than I was the first time I saw it. And it was enjoyable. It was a cute film. It had its moments. It was a little lighthearted. It could have done better, and like we've said, in like a post-Scott Pilgrim kind of world, it could have really hit on the imagination bits better. I dispute the fact that it's really a strong woman kind of thing. I think there's an argument to be made that she's doing all this to find a man, and she somehow defines herself by her relationship, which, you know, you can go either way on that. But she still gets what she wants, which I think is the ultimate point. And it's enjoyable, and the Britishness is enjoyable, and it's quirky enough to be fun.
Great. Yeah, I mean, when I first saw this, I definitely related to Bridget, and I thought, oh, what a strong character, and what a good role model for me to look up to. Like, yeah, she just does her own thing, and so what? She shags her boss. She just goes and gets another job, and she does really well at that, and, you know, she's got all these guys that are running all over trying to get her, and that's how I saw it as a younger Madison. Current Madison, rewatching this last night, was thinking, oh, wow, maybe not a good role model. You know, the fact that her whole life, as John said, is identified by her relationship status, not really something that I think should be perpetuated. But, you know, she did get what she wanted. She wanted a man. She got her man. So I guess bravo to that. It's still a movie that I really enjoy. I watch this a couple times a year still. I really like it, and I'm looking forward to the trilogy. I'm sorry, the third, because the second one was okay, but I'm looking forward to this new one to see where her hijinks take her this time. So with that, we're out of time. Tune in again next week as we put another little piece of your past on trial.
Myopia Defend Your Childhood is produced by Dude Letter Podcasting. It's hosted by Nick Hoffman, produced and mixed by Ann Burns, and edited by Nick Hoffman. Our graphic designer is Scott Miller. The theme song is Caroline, written and performed by The Serenaders. Purchase their music through the Amazon link on dudeletter.com. Questions or comments? Please visit myopiapodcast.com or contact us through myopiapodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter, at Myopia Podcast and at Dude Letter, and find us on our Facebook, Stitcher, and iTunes pages. And while you're on iTunes, please rate and review our podcast. It helps us out a lot. Want to give us money? Go to myopiapodcast.com/Amazon and purchase stuff like normal. Myopia gets a piece of the action. Time can't eat.